This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents The Grapes of Wrath, written by John Steinbeck, read by Dylan Baker.
Chapter 1. To the red country and part of the gray country of Oklahoma, the last rains came gently, and they did not cut the scarred earth. The plows crossed and recrossed the rivulet marks. The last rains lifted the corn quickly and scattered weed colonies and grass along the sides of the roads, so that the gray country and the dark red country began to disappear under a green cover. In the last part of May, the sky grew pale, and the clouds that had hung in high puffs for so long in the spring were dissipated. The sun flared down on the growing corn day after day, until a line of brown spread along the edge of each green bayonet. The clouds appeared and went away, and in a while they did not try any more. The weeds grew darker green to protect themselves, and they did not spread any more. The surface of the earth crusted, a thin, hard crust, and as the sky became pale, so the earth became pale, pink in the red country and white in the gray country. In the water-cut gullies, the earth dusted down in dry little streams. Gophers and antlions started small avalanches. And as the sharp sun struck day after day, the leaves of the young corn became less stiff and erect. They bent in a curve at first, and then, as the central ribs of strength grew weak, each leaf tilted downward. Then it was June, and the sun shone more fiercely. The brown lines on the corn leaves widened and moved in on the central ribs. The weeds frayed and edged back toward their roots. The air was thin, and the sky more pale, and every day the earth paled. In the roads where the teams moved, where the wheels milled the ground and the hooves of the horses beat the ground, the dirt crust broke and the dust formed. Every moving thing lifted the dust into the air. A walking man lifted a thin layer as high as his waist, and a wagon lifted the dust as high as the fence tops, and an automobile boiled a cloud behind it. The dust was long in settling back again. When June was half gone, the big clouds moved up out of Texas and the Gulf, high, heavy clouds, rainheads. The men in the fields looked up at the clouds and sniffed at them and held wet fingers up to sense the wind. And the horses were nervous when the clouds were up. The rain heads dropped a little spattering and hurried on to some other country. Behind them the sky was pale again and the sun flared. In the dust there were drop craters where the rain had fallen, and there were clean splashes on the corn, and that was all. A gentle wind followed the rain clouds, driving them on northward, a wind that softly clashed the drying corn. A day went by and the wind increased, steady, unbroken by gusts. The dust from the roads fluffed up and spread out and fell on the weeds beside the fields, and fell into the fields a little way. Now the wind grew strong and hard, and it worked at the rain crust in the cornfields. Little by little the sky was darkened by the mixing dust, and the wind felt over the earth, loosened the dust, and carried it away. The wind grew stronger. The rain crust broke, and the dust lifted up out of the fields and drove gray plumes into the air like sluggish smoke. The corn threshed the wind and made a dry, rushing sound. The finest dust did not settle back to the earth now, but disappeared into the darkening sky. The wind grew stronger, whisked under stones, carried up straws and old leaves and even little clods, marking its course as it sailed across the fields. The air and the sky darkened, and through them the sun shone redly, and there was a raw sting in the air. During a night the wind raced faster over the land, dug cunningly among the rootlets of the corn, and the corn fought the wind with its weakened leaves until the roots were freed by the prying wind, and then each stalk settled wearily sideways toward the earth and pointed the direction of the wind. The dawn came, but no day. In the gray sky a red sun appeared, a dim red circle that gave a little light, like dusk, and as that day advanced, the dusk slipped back toward darkness, and the wind cried and whimpered over the fallen corn. Men and women huddled in their houses, and they tied handkerchiefs over their noses when they went out, and wore goggles to protect their eyes. When the night came again, it was black night, for the stars could not pierce the dust to get down, and the window lights could not even spread beyond their own yards. Now the dust was evenly mixed with the air, an emulsion of dust and air. Houses were shut tight, and cloth wedged around doors and windows, but the dust came in so thinly that it could not be seen in the air, and it settled like pollen on the chairs and tables, on the dishes. The people brushed it from their shoulders. Little lines of dust lay at the door sills. In the middle of that night the wind passed on and left the land quiet. The dust-filled air muffled sound more completely than fog does. The people lying in their beds heard the wind stop. They awakened when the rushing wind was gone. They lay quietly and listened deep into the stillness. Then the roosters crowed, and their voices were muffled, and the people stirred restlessly in their beds and wanted the morning. They knew it would take a long time for the dust to settle out of the air. In the morning the dust hung like fog, and the sun was as red as ripe new blood. All day the dust sifted down from the sky, and the next day it sifted down. An even blanket covered the earth. It settled on the corn, piled up on the tops of the fence posts, piled up on the wires. It settled on roofs, blanketed the weeds and trees. The people came out of their houses and smelled the hot, stinging air and covered their noses from it. And the children came out of the houses, but they did not run or shout as they would have done after a rain. Men stood by their fences and looked at the ruined corn, drying fast now, only a little green showing through the film of dust. The men were silent, and they did not move often. And the women came out of the houses to stand beside their men, to feel whether this time the men would break. The women studied the men's faces secretly, for the corn could go, as long as something else remained. The children stood nearby, drawing figures in the dust with bare toes, and the children sent exploring senses out to see whether men and women would break. The children peeked at the faces of the men and women, and then drew careful lines in the dust with their toes. Horses came to the watering troughs and nuzzled the water to clear the surface dust. After a while, the faces of the watching men lost their bemused perplexity and became hard and angry and resistant. Then the women knew that they were safe and that there was no break. Then they asked, "What'll we do?" And the men replied, "I don't know." But it was all right. The women knew it was all right, and the watching children knew it was all right. Women and children knew deep in themselves that no misfortune was too great to bear if their men were whole. The women went into the houses to their work, and the children began to play, but cautiously at first. As the day went forward, the sun became less red. It flared down on the dust-blanketed land. The men sat in the doorways of their houses. Their hands were busy with sticks and little rocks. The men sat still, thinking, figuring. Chapter 2. A huge red transport truck stood in front of the little roadside restaurant. The vertical exhaust pipe muttered softly, and an almost invisible haze of steel-blue smoke hovered over its end. It was a new truck, shining red, and in 12-inch letters on its sides, Oklahoma City Transport Company. Its double tires were new, and a brass padlock stood straight out from the hasp on the big back doors. Inside the screened restaurant, a radio played. Quiet dance music turned low the way it is when no one is listening. A small outlet fan turned silently in its circular hole over the entrance, and flies buzzed excitedly about the doors and windows, butting the screens. Inside, one man, the truck driver, sat on a stool and rested his elbows on the counter and looked over his coffee at the lean and lonely waitress. He talked the smart, listless language of the roadsides to her.
"I seen him about 3 months ago. He had an operation, cut something out, I forget what."
And she, "Doesn't seem no longer ago than a week I seen him myself. Look fine then. He's a nice sort of a guy when he ain't stinko." Now and then the flies roared softly at the screen door. The coffee machine spurted steam, and the waitress, without looking, reached behind her and shut it off. Outside, a man walking along the edge of the highway crossed over and approached the truck. He walked slowly to the front of it, put his hand on the shiny fender, and looked at the No Riders sticker on the windshield. For a moment he was about to walk on down the road, but instead he sat on the running board on the side away from the restaurant. He was not over 30. His eyes were very dark brown, and there was a hint of brown pigment in his eyeballs. His cheekbones were high and wide, and strong, deep lines cut down his cheeks, in curves beside his mouth. His upper lip was long, and since his teeth protruded, the lips stretched to cover them, for this man kept his lips closed. His hands were hard, with broad fingers and nails as thick and ridged as little clamshells. The space between thumb and forefinger in the hams of his hands were shiny with callus. The man's clothes were new, all of them, cheap and new. His gray cap was so new that the visor was still stiff and the button still on, not shapeless and bulged as it would be when it had served for a while all the various purposes of a cap, carrying sack, towel, handkerchief. His suit was of cheap gray hard cloth, and so new that there were creases in the trousers. His blue chambray shirt was stiff and smooth with filler. The coat was too big, the trousers too short, for he was a tall man. The coat's shoulder peaks hung down on his arms, and even then the sleeves were too short and the front of the coat flapped loosely over his stomach. He wore a pair of new tan shoes of the kind called Army Last, hobnailed and with half circles like horseshoes to protect the edges of the heels from wear. This man sat on the running board and took off his cap and mopped his face with it. Then he put on the cap, and by pulling started the future ruin of the visor. His feet caught his attention. He leaned down and loosened the shoelaces and did not tie the ends again. Over his head the exhaust of the diesel engine whispered in quick puffs of blue smoke. The music stopped in the restaurant, and a man's voice spoke from the loudspeaker, but the waitress did not turn him off, for she didn't know the music had stopped. Her exploring fingers had found a lump under her ear. She was trying to see it in a mirror behind the counter, without letting the truck driver know, and so she pretended to push a bit of hair to neatness. The truck driver said,
"They was a big dance in Shawnee. I heard somebody got killed or something. You hear anything?"
"No," said the waitress, and she lovingly fingered the lump under her ear. Outside, the seated man stood up and looked over the cowl of the truck and watched the restaurant for a moment. Then he settled back on the running board, pulled a sack of tobacco and a book of papers from his side pocket. He rolled his cigarette slowly and perfectly, studied it, smoothed it, At last he lighted it and pushed the burning match into the dust at his feet. The sun cut into the shade of the truck as noon approached. In the restaurant, the truck driver paid his bill and put his 2 nickels change in a slot machine. The whirling cylinders gave him no score.
"They fix 'em so you can't win nothing," he said to the waitress,
and she replied, "Guy took the jackpot not 2 hours ago. 380 he got. How soon you gonna be back by?" He held the screen door a little open.
"Week, 10 days, he said. "Got to make a run to Tulsa, and I never get back soon as I think."
She said crossly,
"Don't let the flies in. Either go out or come in." "So long," he said, and pushed his way out.
The screen door banged behind him. He stood in the sun, peeling the wrapper from a piece of gum. He was a heavy man, broad in the shoulders, thick in the stomach. His face was red and his blue eyes long and slitted from having squinted always at sharp light. He wore army trousers and high-laced boots. Holding the stick of gum in front of his lips, he called through the screen,
"Well, don't do nothing you don't want me to hear about."
The waitress was turned toward a mirror on the back wall. She grunted a reply. The truck driver gnawed down the stick of gum slowly, opening his jaws and lips wide with each bite. He shaped the gum in his mouth, rolled it under his tongue while he walked to the big red truck. The hitchhiker stood up and looked across through the windows.
"Could you give me a lift, mister?"
The driver looked quickly back at the restaurant for a second.
"Didn't you see the no rider sticker on the windshield?"
"Sure, I seen it. Sometimes a guy'll be a good guy, even if some rich bastard makes him carry a sticker."
The driver, getting slowly into the truck, considered the parts of this answer. If he refused now, not only was he not a good guy, but he was forced to carry a sticker, was not allowed to have company. If he took in the hitchhiker, he was automatically a good guy, and also he was not one whom any rich bastard could kick around. He knew he was being trapped, but he couldn't see a way out, and he wanted to be a good guy. He glanced again at the restaurant.
"Scrunch down on the running board till we get around the bend," he said.
The hitchhiker flopped down out of sight and clung to the door handle. The motor roared up for a moment, the gears clicked in, and the great truck moved away. First gear, second gear, third gear, and then a high, whining pickup and fourth gear. Under the clinging man, the highway blurred dizzily by. It was a mile to the first turn in the road, then the truck slowed down. The hitchhiker stood up, eased the door open, and slipped into the seat. The driver looked over at him, slitting his eyes, and he chewed as though thoughts and impressions were being sorted and arranged by his jaws before they were finally filed away in his brain. His eyes began at the new cap, moved down the new clothes to the new shoes. The hitchhiker squirmed his back against the seat in comfort, took off his cap, and swabbed his sweating forehead and chin with it.
"Thanks, buddy," he said. "My dogs was pooped out."
"New shoes," said the driver. His voice had the same quality of secrecy and insinuation his eyes had.
"You oughtn't to take no walk in new shoes. Hot weather."
The hiker looked down at the dusty yellow shoes.
"Didn't have no other shoes," he said. "Guy gotta wear 'em if he got no others."
The driver squinted judiciously ahead and built up the speed of the truck a little.
"Going far?"
"Uh-uh.
I'd have walked her if my dogs wasn't pooped out."
The questions of the driver had the tone of a subtle examination. He seemed to spread nets, to set traps with his questions.
"Looking for a job?" he asked.
"No. My old man got a place, 40 acres. He's a cropper, but we've been there a long time." The driver looked significantly at the fields along the road where the corn was fallen sideways and the dust was piled on it. Little flints shoved through the dusty soil. The driver said, as though to himself, "A 40-acre cropper? And he ain't been dusted out? And he ain't been tractored out?"
"Course I ain't heard lately," said the hitchhiker.
"Long time," said the driver. A bee flew into the cab and buzzed in back of the windshield. The driver put out his hand and carefully drove the bee into an airstream that blew it out of the window.
"Cropper's going fast now," he said. "One cat takes and shoves 10 families out. Cats all over hell now. Tear in and shove the croppers out. How's your old man hold on?"
His tongue and his jaws became busy with the neglected gum, turned it and chewed it. With each opening of his mouth, his tongue could be seen flipping the gum over.
"Well, I ain't heard lately. I never was no hand to write, nor my old man neither," he added quickly. "But the both of us can, if we want."
"Been doing a job?" Again the secret investigating casualness. He looked out over the fields, at the shimmering air, and gathering his gum into his cheek, out of the way, he spat out the window.
"Sure have," said the hitchhiker.
"Thought so. I've seen your hands. Been swinging a pick, or an axe, or a sledge. That shines up your hands. I notice all stuff like that. Take a pride in it."
The hitchhiker stared at him. The truck tires sang on the road.
"Like to know anything else? I'll tell you. You ain't got a guess."
"Now, don't get sore. I wasn't getting nosy."
"I'll tell you anything. I ain't hiding nothing."
"Now, don't get sore. I just like to notice things. Makes the time pass."
"I'll tell you anything. Name's Joad. Tom Joad. Old man is old Tom Joad."
His eyes rested broodingly on the driver.
"Don't get sore. I didn't mean nothing." "I don't mean nothing neither," said Joad. "I'm just trying to get along without shoving nobody around."
He stopped and looked out at the dry fields, at the starved tree clumps hanging uneasily in the heated distance. From his side pocket he brought out his tobacco and papers. He rolled his cigarette down between his knees where the wind could not get at it. The driver chewed as rhythmically, as thoughtfully as a cow. He waited to let the whole emphasis of the preceding passage disappear and be forgotten. At last, when the air seemed neutral again, he said,
"A guy that never been a truck skinner don't know nothing what it's like. Owners don't want us to pick up nobody, so we gotta sit here and just skinner along, unless we want to take a chance getting fired, like I just done with you."
"Appreciate it," said Joad.
"I've knew guys that done screwy things while they're driving trucks. I remember a guy used to make up poetry. It passed the time."
He looked over secretly to see whether Joad was interested or amazed. Joad was silent, looking into the distance ahead, along the road, along the white road that waved gently like a ground swell. The driver went on at last,
"I remember a piece of poetry this here guy wrote down. It was about him and a couple other guys going all over the world drinking and raising hell and screwing around. I wished I could remember how that piece went. This guy had words in it that Jesus H. Christ wouldn't know what they meant. Part was like this: and there we spied a nigger with a trigger that was bigger than an elephant's proboscis or the wanger of a whale. That proboscis is a nose, like. With an elephant, it's his trunk. Guy showed me in a dictionary. Carried that dictionary all over hell with him. He'd look in it while he's pulled up getting his pie and coffee."
He stopped, feeling lonely in the long speech. His secret eyes turned on his passenger. Joad remained silent. Nervously, the driver tried to force him into participation.
"Ever know a guy that said big words like that?"
"Preacher," said Joad.
"Well, Makes you mad to hear a guy use big words. Of course, with a preacher it's all right, because nobody would fool around with a preacher anyway. But this guy was funny. You didn't give a damn when he said a big word, because he just done it for ducks. He wasn't putting on no dog. The driver was reassured. He knew at least that Jode was listening. He swung the great truck viciously around a bend, and the tires shrilled. "Like I was saying," he continued, "guy that drives a truck does screwy things. He got to. He'd go nuts just sitting here in the road, sneaking under the wheels. Fella says once that truck skinners eats all the time in hamburger joints along the road."
"Sure seem to live there," Jode agreed.
"Sure, they stop, but it ain't to eat. They ain't hardly ever hungry. They're just goddamn sick of going. Get sick of it. Joints is the only place you can pull up, and when you stop, you gotta buy something, so you can sling the bull with the broad behind the counter. So you get a cup of coffee and a piece of pie. Kind of gives the guy a little rest." He chewed his gum slowly and turned it with his tongue.
"Must be tough," said Jode with no emphasis.
The driver glanced quickly at him, looking for satire.
"Well, it ain't no goddamn cinch," he said testily. "Looks easy, just sitting here till you put in your 8 or maybe your 10 or 14 hours. But the road gets into a guy. He's got to do something. Some sings and some whistles. Company won't let us have no radio. A few takes a pint along, but them kind don't stick long," he said the last smugly. "I don't never take a drink till I'm through."
"Yeah?" Jode asked.
"Yeah, guy gotta get ahead. Why, I'm thinking of taking one of them correspondence school courses. Mechanical engineering. It's easy. Just study a few easy lessons at home. I'm thinking of it. Then I won't drive no truck. Then I'll tell other guys to drive trucks."
Jode took a pint of whiskey from his side coat pocket.
"Sure you won't have a snort?"
His voice was teasing.
"No, by God. Won't touch it. A guy can't drink liquor all the time and study like I'm going to."
Jode uncorked the bottle, took 2 quick swallows, recorked it, and put it back in his pocket. The spicy, hot smell of the whiskey filled the cab.
"You're all wound up," said Jode.
"What's the matter? Got a girl?"
"Well, sure, but I want to get ahead anyway. I've been training my mind for a hell of a long time."
The whiskey seemed to loosen Jode up. He rolled another cigarette and lighted it.
"I ain't got a hell of a lot further to go," he said.
The driver went on quickly.
"I don't need no shot," he said. "I train my mind all the time. I took a course in that 2 years ago."
He patted the steering wheel with his right hand.
"Suppose I pass a guy on the road. I look at him. And after I'm passed, I try to remember everything about him. Kind of clothes and shoes and hat and how he walked and maybe how tall and what weight and any scars. I'd do it pretty good. I can just make a whole picture in my head. Sometimes I think I ought to take a course to be a fingerprint expert. You'd be surprised how much a guy can remember."
Jode took a quick drink from the flask. He dragged the last smoke from his raveling cigarette, and then with calloused thumb and forefinger crushed out the glowing end. He rubbed the butt to a pulp and put it out the window, letting the breeze suck it from his fingers. The big tire sang a high note on the pavement. Jode's dark, quiet eyes became amused as he stared along the road. The driver waited and glanced uneasily over. At last Jode's long upper lip grinned up from his teeth, and he chuckled silently. His chest jerked with the chuckles.
"You sure took a hell of a long time to get to it, buddy."
The driver did not look over.
"Get to what? How do you mean?"
Jode's lips stretched tight over his long teeth for a moment, and he licked his lips like a dog, 2 licks, 1 in each direction from the middle. His voice became harsh.
You know what I mean. You gimme a going over when I first got in. I seen you.
The driver looked straight ahead, gripped the wheel so tightly that the pads of his palms bulged and the backs of his hands paled.
Joad continued, You know where I come from?
The driver was silent.
Don't you?
Joad insisted.
Well, sure, that is, maybe, but it ain't none of my business. I mind my own yard. Ain't nothing to me.
The words tumbled out now.
I don't stick my nose in nobody's business.
And suddenly he was silent and waiting, and his hands were still white on the wheel. A grasshopper flipped through the window and lighted on top of the instrument panel, where it sat and began to scrape its wings with its angled jumping legs. Joad reached forward and crushed its hard, skull-like head with his fingers, and he let it into the wind stream out the window. Joad chuckled again while he brushed the bits of broken insect from his fingertips.
You got me wrong, mister, he said. I ain't keeping quiet about it. Sure, I've been in McAllister. Been there 4 years. Sure, these is the clothes they gimme when I come out. I don't give a damn who knows it. And I'm going to my old man's place so I don't have to lie to get a job.
The driver said,
Well, that ain't none of my business. I ain't a nosy guy.
The hell you ain't, said Joad. That big old nose of yours been sticking out 8 miles ahead of your face. You had that big nose going over me like a sheep in a vegetable patch.
The driver's face tightened.
You got me all wrong, he began weakly.
Joad laughed at him. You've been a good guy. You give me a lift.
Well, hell, I done time, so what?
You want to know what I done time for, don't you?
That ain't none of my affair.
Nothing ain't none of your affair except skinning this here bull bitch along, and that's the least thing you work at. Now look, see that road up ahead?
Yeah.
Well, I get off there. Sure, I know you're wetting your pants to know what I done. I ain't a guy to let you down.
The high hum of the motor dulled and the song of the tires dropped in pitch. Joad got out his pint and took another short drink. The truck drifted to a stop where a dirt road opened at right angles to the highway. Joad got out and stood beside the cab window. The vertical exhaust pipe puttered up its barely visible blue smoke. Joad leaned toward the driver.
Homicide, he said quickly. That's a big word. Means I killed a guy. 7 years. I'm sprung in 4 for keeping my nose clean.
The driver's eyes slipped over Joad's face to memorize it.
I never asked you nothing about it, he said. I mind my own yard.
You can tell about it in every joint from here to Texola, he smiled. So long, fella. You've been a good guy. But look, when you've been in stir a little while, you can smell a question coming from hell to breakfast. You telegraphed yours the first time you opened your trap.
He spatted the metal door with the palm of his hand.
Thanks for the lift, he said. So long.
He turned away and walked into the dirt road. For a moment, the driver stared after him, and then he called,
Luck!
Joad waved his hand without looking around. Then the motor roared up, and the gears clicked, and the great red truck rolled heavily away.
Chapter 3. The concrete highway was edged with a mat of tangled, broken, dry grass, and the grass heads were heavy with oat beards to catch on a dog's coat, and foxtails to tangle in a horse's fetlocks, and clover burrs to fasten in sheep's wool. Sleeping life waiting to be spread and dispersed, every seed armed with an appliance of dispersal
twisting darts and parachutes for the wind, little spears and balls of tiny thorns, and all waiting for animals and for the wind, for a man's trouser cuff or the hem of a woman's skirt, all passive, but armed with appliances of activity, still, but each possessed of the onlodge of movement. The sun lay on the grass and warmed it, and in the shade under the grass the insects moved, ants and ant lions to set traps for them, grasshoppers to jump into the air and flick their yellow wings for a second, sow bugs like little armadillos plodding restlessly on many tender feet. And over the grass at the roadside a land turtle crawled, turning aside for nothing, dragging his high domed shell over the grass. His hard legs and yellow-nailed feet threshed slowly through the grass, not really walking, but boosting and dragging his shell along. The barley beard slid off his shell, and the clover burrs fell on him and rolled to the ground. His horny beak was partly open, and his fierce, humorous eyes under brows like fingernails stared straight ahead. He came over the grass, leaving a beaten trail behind him, and the hill, which was the highway embankment, reared up ahead of him. For a moment he stopped, his head held high. He blinked and looked up and down. At last he started to climb the embankment. Front clawed feet reached forward, but did not touch. The hind feet kicked his shell along, and it scraped on the grass and on the gravel. As the embankment grew steeper and steeper, the more frantic were the efforts of the land turtle. Pushing hind legs strained and slipped, boosting the shell along, and the horny head protruded as far as the neck could stretch. Little by little the shell slid up the embankment until at last a parapet cut straight across its line of march, the shoulder of the road, a concrete wall 4 inches high. As though they worked independently, the hind legs pushed the shell against the wall. The head upraised and peered over the wall to the broad, smooth plain of cement. Now the hands, braced on top of the wall, strained and lifted, and the shell came slowly up and rested its front end on the wall. For a moment the turtle rested. A red ant ran into the shell, into the soft skin inside the shell, and suddenly head and legs snapped in, and the armored tail clamped in sideways. The red ant was crushed between body and legs, and one head of wild oats was clamped into the shell by a front leg. For a long moment the turtle lay still, and then the neck crept out, and the old humorous frowning eyes looked about, and the legs and tail came out. The back legs went to work, straining like elephant legs, and the shell tipped to an angle so that the front legs could not reach the level cement plain, but higher and higher the hind legs boosted it, until at last the center of balance was reached, the front tipped down, the front legs scratched at the pavement, and it was up. But the head of wild oats was held by its stem around the front legs. Now the going was easy. And all the legs worked, and the shell boosted along, waggling from side to side. A sedan driven by a 40-year-old woman approached. She saw the turtle and swung to the right, off the highway. The wheels screamed, and a cloud of dust boiled up. Two wheels lifted for a moment, and then settled. The car skidded back onto the road and went on, but more slowly. The turtle had jerked into its shell, but now it hurried on, for the highway was burning hot. And now a light truck approached, and as it came near, the driver saw the turtle and swerved to hit it. His front wheel struck the edge of the shell, flipped the turtle like a tiddlywink, spun it like a coin, and rolled it off the highway. The truck went back to its course along the right side. Lying on its back, the turtle was tight in its shell for a long time, but at last its legs waved in the air, reaching for something to pull it over. Its front foot caught a piece of quartz, and little by little, the shell pulled over and flopped upright. the wild oat head fell out, and three of the spearhead seeds stuck in the ground. And as the turtle crawled on down the embankment, its shell dragged dirt over the seeds. The turtle entered a dust road and jerked itself along, drawing a wavy, shallow trench in the dust with its shell. The old humorous eyes looked ahead, and the horny beak opened a little. His yellow toenails slipped a fraction in the dust. Chapter 4. When Jode heard the truck get underway, gear climbing up to gear and the ground throbbing under the rubber beating of the tires, he stopped and turned about and watched it until it disappeared. When it was out of sight, he still watched the distance and the blue air shimmer. Thoughtfully, he took the pint from his pocket, unscrewed the metal cap, and sipped the whiskey delicately, running his tongue inside the bottleneck and then around his lips, to gather in any flavor that might have escaped him. He said experimentally, "There we spied a nigger." And that was all he could remember. At last he turned about and faced the dusty side road that cut off at right angles through the fields. The sun was hot, and no wind stirred the sifted dust. The road was cut with furrows where dust had slid and settled back into the wheel tracks. Jode took a few steps, and the flower-like dust spurted up in front of his new yellow shoes, and the yellowness was disappearing under gray dust. He leaned down and untied the laces, slipped off first one shoe and then the other, and he worked his damp feet comfortably in the hot, dry dust until little spurts of it came up between his toes, and until the skin on his feet tightened with dryness. He took off his coat and wrapped his shoes in it, and slipped the bundle under his arm, and at last he moved up the road, shooting the dust ahead of him, making a cloud that hung low to the ground behind him. The right-of-way was fenced, two strands of barbed wire on willow poles. The poles were crooked and badly trimmed. Whenever a crotch came to the proper height, the wire lay in it, and where there was no crotch, the barbed wire was lashed to the post with rusty baling wire. Beyond the fence, the corn lay beaten down by wind and heat and drought, and the cups where leaf joined stalk were filled with dust. Jode plodded along, dragging his cloud of dust behind him. A little bit ahead he saw the high domed shell of a land turtle, crawling slowly along through the dust, its legs working stiffly and jerkily. Jode stopped to watch it, and his shadow fell on the turtle. Instantly head and legs were withdrawn, and the short, thick tail clamped sideways into the shell. Jode picked it up and turned it over. The back was brown-gray like the dust, but the underside of the shell was creamy yellow, clean and smooth. Jode shifted his bundle high under his arm and stroked the smooth undershell with his finger, and he pressed it. It was softer than the back. The hard old head came out and tried to look at the pressing finger, and the legs waved wildly. The turtle wetted on Jode's hand and struggled uselessly in the air. Jode turned it back upright and rolled it up in his coat with his shoes. He could feel it pressing and struggling and fussing under his arm. He moved ahead more quickly now, dragging his heels a little in the fine dust. Ahead of him, beside the road, a scrawny, dusty willow tree cast a speckled shade. Jode could see it ahead of him, its poor branches curving over the way, its load of leaves tattered and scraggly as a molting chicken. Jode was sweating now, his blue shirt darkened down his back and under his arms. He pulled at the visor of his cap and creased it in the middle, breaking its cardboard lining so completely that it could never look new again. and his steps took on new speed and intent toward the shade of the distant willow tree. At the willow he knew there would be shade, at least one hard bar of absolute shade thrown by the trunk, since the sun had passed its zenith. The sun whipped the back of his neck now, and made a little humming in his head. He could not see the base of the tree, for it grew out of a little swale that held water longer than the level places. Jode speeded his pace against the sun, and he started down the declivity. He slowed cautiously, for the bar of absolute shade was taken. A man sat on the ground, leaning against the trunk of the tree. His legs were crossed, and one bare foot extended nearly as high as his head. He did not hear Jode approaching, for he was whistling solemnly the tune of, "Yes, sir, that's my baby." His extended foot swung slowly up and down in the tempo. It was not dance tempo. He stopped whistling and sang in an easy, thin tenor.
"Yes, sir, that's my savior. Jesus is my savior. Jesus is my savior now. On the level, is not the devil. Jesus is my savior now."
Jode had moved into the imperfect shade of the molting leaves before the man heard him coming, stopped his song, and turned his head. It was a long head, bony, tight of skin, and set on a neck as stringy and muscular as a celery stalk. His eyeballs were heavy and protruding. The lids stretched to cover them, and the lids were raw and red. His cheeks were brown and shiny and hairless, and his mouth full, humorous or sensual. The nose, beaked and hard, stretched the skin so tightly that the bridge showed white. There was no perspiration on the face, not even on the tall, pale forehead. It was an abnormally high forehead, lined with delicate blue veins at the temples. Fully half of the face was above the eyes. His stiff gray hair was mussed back from his brow as though he had combed it back with his fingers. For clothes, he wore overalls and a blue shirt. A denim coat with brass buttons and a spotted brown hat creased like a pork pie lay on the ground beside him. Canvas sneakers, gray with dust, lay nearby where they had fallen when they were kicked off. The man looked long at Jode. The light seemed to go far into his brown eyes, and it picked out little golden specks deep in the irises. The strained bundle of neck muscles stood out. Jode stood still in the speckled shade. He took off his cap and mopped his wet face with it and dropped it in his rolled coat on the ground. The man in the absolute shade uncrossed his legs and dug his toes at the earth. Jode said, "Aye, it's hotter'n hell on the road." The seated man stared questioningly at him.
"Now, ain't you young Tom Jode? Old Tom's boy?"
"Yeah," said Jode, "all the way. Going home now."
"You wouldn't remember me, I guess,"
the man said. He smiled, and his full lips revealed great horse teeth.
"Oh, no. You wouldn't remember. You was always too busy pulling little girls' pigtails when I give you the Holy Spirit. You was all wrapped up in yanking that pigtail out by the roots. You maybe don't recollect, but I do. The two of you come to Jesus at once because of that pigtail yanking. Baptized both of you in the irrigation ditch at once, fighting and yelling like a couple of cats."
Jode looked at him with drooped eyes, and then he laughed.
"Why, you're the preacher. You're the preacher. I just passed a recollection about you to a guy not an hour ago."
"I was a preacher," said the man seriously. "Reverend Jim Casey. Was a burning busher. Used to howl out the name of Jesus to glory. and used to get an irrigation ditch so squirmin' full of repented sinners half of 'em liked to drownded. But not no more, he sighed. Just Jim Casey now. Ain't got to call no more. Got a lot of sinful ideas, but they seem kind of sensible.
Joad said, You're bound to get ideas if you go thinking about stuff. Sure, I remember you. You used to give a good meeting. I recollect one time you give a whole sermon walking around on your hands, yelling your head off. Ma favored you more than anybody. And Grandma says you's just lousy with the spirit.
Joad dug at his rolled coat and found the pocket and brought out his pint. The turtle moved a leg, but he wrapped it up tightly. He unscrewed the cap and held out the bottle.
Have a little snort?
Casey took the bottle and regarded it broodingly.
I ain't preaching no more much. The spirit ain't in the people much no more. And worse than that, the spirit ain't in me no more. Course, now and again the spirit gets moving and I rip out a meeting. Or when folks sets out food, I give 'em a grace. But my heart ain't in it. I only do it 'cause they expect it.
Joad mopped his face with his cap again.
You ain't too damn holy to take a drink, are you? He asked.
Casey seemed to see the bottle for the first time. He tilted it and took three big swallows.
Nice drinkin' liquor, he said.
Oughta be, said Joad. That's factory liquor. Cost a buck.
Casey took another swallow before he passed the bottle back.
Yes, sir, he said. Yes, sir.
Joad took the bottle from him, and in politeness did not wipe the neck with his sleeve before he drank. He squatted on his hams and set the bottle upright against his coat roll. His fingers found a twig with which to draw his thoughts on the ground. He swept the leaves from a square and smoothed the dust, and he drew angles and made little circles.
I ain't seen you in a long time, he said.
Nobody seen me, said the preacher. I went off alone, and I sat and figured. The spirit's strong in me, only it ain't the same. I ain't so sure of a lot of things.
He sat up straighter against the tree. His bony hand dug its way like a squirrel into his overall pocket, brought out a black, bitten plug of tobacco. Carefully he brushed off bits of straw and gray pocket fuzz before he bit off a corner and settled the quid into his cheek. Joad waved his stick in negation when the plug was held out to him. The turtle dug at the rolled coat. Casey looked over at the stirring garment.
What you got there? A chicken? You'll smother it.
Joad rolled the coat up more tightly. An old turtle, he said. Picked him up on the road. An old bulldozer. Thought I'd take him to my little brother. Kids like turtles. The preacher nodded his head slowly.
Every kid got a turtle, sometime or other. Nobody can't keep a turtle, though. They work at it and work at it, and at last, one day they get out, and away they go. Off somewheres. It's like me. I wouldn't take the good old gospel that was just laying there to my hand. I got to be picking at it and working at it until I got it all tore down. Here I got the spirit sometimes and nothing to preach about. I got the call to lead the people and no place to lead 'em. Lead 'em around and around, said Joad. Sling 'em in the irrigation ditch. Tell 'em they'll burn in hell if they don't think like you. What the hell you want to lead 'em someplace for? Just lead 'em.
The straight trunk shade had stretched out along the ground. Joad moved gratefully into it and squatted on his hams and made a new, smooth place on which to draw his thoughts with a stick. A thick-furred yellow shepherd dog came trotting down the road, head low, tongue lolling and dripping. Its tail hung limply curled, and it panted loudly. Joad whistled at it, but it only dropped its head an inch and trotted fast
toward some definite destination.
Going someplace, Jode explained, a little piqued. Going for home, maybe.
The preacher could not be thrown from his subject.
Going someplace, he repeated. That's right. He's going someplace. Me? I don't know where I'm going. Tell you what, I used to get the people jumping and talking in tongues and glorious shouting till they just fell down and passed out. And some I baptized to bring them to. And then, you know what I'd do? I'd take one of them girls out in the grass, and I'd lay with her. Done it every time. Then I'd feel bad, and I'd pray and pray, but it didn't do no good. Come the next time them and me was full of the Spirit, I'd do it again. I figured there just wasn't no hope for me, and I was a damned old hypocrite. But I didn't mean to be.
Jode smiled, and his long teeth parted, and he licked his lips. There ain't nothing like a good hot meeting for pushing 'em over, he said. I done that myself. Casey leaned forward excitedly.
You see? He cried. I seen it was that way, and I started thinking.
He waved his bony, big-knuckled hand up and down in a patting gesture.
I got to thinking like this. Here's me preaching grace. And here's them people getting grace so hard they're jumping and shouting. Now they say laying up with a girl comes from the devil. But the more grace a girl got in her, the quicker she wants to go out in the grass. And I got to thinking, how in hell, how can the devil get in when a girl is so full of the Holy Spirit that it's spouting out of her nose and ears? You'd think that'd be one time when the devil didn't stand a snowball's chance in hell, but there it was.
His eyes were shining with excitement. He worked his cheeks for a moment and then spat into the dust, and the gob of spit rolled over and over, picking up dust until it looked like a round, dry little pellet. The preacher spread out his hand and looked at his palm as though he were reading a book.
And there's me, he went on softly. There's me with all them people's souls in my hand. Responsible, and feeling my responsibility. And every time I lay with one of them girls.
He looked over at Jode, and his face looked helpless. His expression asked for help. Jode carefully drew the torso of a woman in the dirt, breasts, hips, pelvis. I wasn't never a preacher, he said. I never let nothing get by when I could catch it. And I never had no ideas about it except I was goddamn glad when I got one.
But you wasn't a preacher, Casey insisted. A girl was just a girl to you. They wasn't nothing to you. But to me they was holy vessels. I was saving their souls. And here with all that responsibility on me, I'd just get 'em frothing with the Holy Spirit, and then I'd take 'em out in the grass.
Maybe I should have been a preacher, said Jode.
He brought out his tobacco and papers and rolled a cigarette. He lighted it and squinted through the smoke at the preacher.
I've been a long time without a girl, he said. It's gonna take some catching up.
Casey continued,
It worried me till I couldn't get no sleep. Here I'd go to preaching and I'd say, By God, this time I ain't gonna do it. And right while I said it, I knowed I was.
You should have got a wife, said Jode. Preacher and his wife stayed at our place one time. Jehovites they was, slept upstairs. Held meetings in our barnyard. Us kids would listen. That preacher's missus took a god-awful pounding after every night meeting.
I'm glad you told me, said Casey. I used to think it was just me. Finally it give me such pain I quit. And went off by myself and give her a damn good thinking about.
He doubled up his legs and scratched between his dry, dusty toes.
I says to myself, "What's gnawing you? Is it the screwing?" And I says, "No, it's the sin." And I says, "Why is it that when a fella ought to be just about